T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Chuck and Winkler, Milwaukee's longest running sports talk morning show. In one corner, a guy who has covered the Packers for 30 plus years. In the other, a Green Bay owner. Chuck and Winkler in the morning on The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. Going to talk to Eli Herskovich at 9 o'clock. We'll talk some NCAA tournament, especially if you want to maybe throw some scratch down on this thing. Did want to give a special shout-out to the Seattle Mariners, who are the first team in Major League Baseball this year to win a game that has gone final from Japan. They beat the A's 9-7. Chris Davis for the A's had a home run, former Brewer. And former Brewer Domingo Santana impressing his new teammates. He had a grand slam. So Mariners win 9-7. Davis and Santana both homer, and Domingo hit the grand slam. So some former Brewers having success.
You talk about a guy you got to ride when he's hot, man. That's Domingo. He's like Middleton. Middleton's going good. Give him the ball. Domingo is going good. Give him at bats.
Matt Velasquez joins us. He's hot right now. We'll get him on from the Journal Sentinel on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Matt, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Matt.
Good morning. I'm great, guys. How are you?
Have you ever been on fire at the typewriter where you're breaking stories and you just feel like in a good swing of things?
I've been in there. I've hit a groove and you just get rolling.
And sometimes you're just like the slump and you just feel like you can't get out of your own way. I mean, we've all been in that role. Miritich, did you find anything about him at all last night? How's that injury? I mean, he went out back and forth the locker room a few times. Anything on that?
No, we asked Bud about it. He didn't have any type of update. And Miritich wasn't in the locker room when we got in there, and a lot of the guys were already out, headed to the planes for the back to back to get to Cleveland. So that's not abnormal. I think it's positive that he was able to return to the game, but yeah, we'll have to see what the latest is on that today.
You know, they certainly have had some injuries this year, the George Hill thing, and some of these other guys have been, you know, banged up, Sterling Brown and Dante. So it's not like they avoided it, but they had been avoiding it, the Bucks, to their main core and to their starters. Then Malcolm Brogdon comes up with an injury Friday. It looks like he's going to miss a while. What do we know about how that did occur, and what do we know about a potential timetable for him to return?
Yeah, he's been dealing with some plantar fascia pain, for at least a month, I would say, probably more during this season. You know, and I remember in Utah when he missed that game on the back-to-back, I asked him how he was doing. He was like, oh, no, it's just plantar fascia, no big deal. Like, he wasn't too worried about it, just trying to give it some rest. But then it looked like in the first quarter of that game in Miami, you know, there was a play about a minute and a half left in the quarter where, you know, he came up kind of like hopping a little bit, wincing, and you know, he's able to keep going. But you know, he definitely on the defensive end right afterwards was kind of just standing around, trying to not to move too much. And once there was a break in the action, he was trying to get off the court. So I think that's where it came from. I think 6 to 8 weeks is the expected timeline. You know, and talking to some of the players, they'll expect that he'll be back. Around the second round of the playoffs. That's what Giannis said. So they're trying just to close out the season, you know, handle the first round and hope to get him back, you know, sometime or, you know, at either at the start of the second round, depending on how he's doing, or sometime during that second round series. That would be the goal.
Can they, if he had to miss extended period past the playoffs, and let's say something, because that's injury, you just never know it, that plantar fasciitis, can the Bucks still win a playoff series beyond the first round without him?
I think so. I think they could. The first round, I feel like that's almost a given at this point. I mean, whatever team they're going to play, they'll have beaten enough times, and this is significantly going to be better then. The second round will be tougher, you know, especially if they get, you know, a team like Boston. But I think by then they'll have kind of adjusted figure out how to best work together without him. Obviously, he's a huge piece of what they do. But, you know, if they can get Sterling Brown back and they can, you know, have Mirotić play like he did last night, you know, have the whole complement of guys available, and I think they can put something together, but it would obviously be a lot better if he could get back into the fold as soon as possible.
Talking with Matt Velasquez here with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, because of the injury, Bucks did make a move bringing Tim Frazier back, who was with them in the preseason, but then getting rid of Christian Wood, and I tweeted, huge mistake. And I did it in a way that it could be tongue-in-cheek if that's how you want to read into it, but it's not. I'm upset. I think Christian Wood's got a lot of potential. The Bucks just never seemed like they wanted to give him a good, solid run there. What was your reaction to that move?
I mean, they had to do what they had to do. You know, they have all these guards hurt. They need another guard. And so, you know, he was the person kind of at the bottom of the pecking order. And they didn't want to give him up. It's not like they were like, oh, yeah, we're just waiting for our opportunity to get rid of Christian Wood. They guaranteed his salary back in January. They kept him. Like, they had him on a non-guaranteed deal next year that he, you know, they could have held on to him for. You know, I think they're intrigued by his talent. I think he's been, you know, playing well in the G League, doing what they've asked. You know, they obviously see him in practice and in G League games and all that stuff. Like, they know that the talent that they're working with, and they said, hey, you know, like, we just need to make a hard decision right now because we need help with our guard depletion. And so they made that choice. And, you know, people might say, oh, well, you know, why'd you bring in Pau Gasol? Why don't you just cut him? You know, I think that's a situation where you have a veteran leader, a two-time champion, guy who's been around the block, who brings that kind of intangible value, even if he's just on the bench and not playing. Because, like, let's be honest, Christian Wood wasn't going to play the rest of the season other than maybe some garbage games when they've already clinched the one seed or something like that. He wasn't going to be a factor in the playoffs. He wasn't going to do anything. And so would you rather have him on your bench or somebody like Pau Gasol, who's been there, done that, you know, whether he plays or not? And so I think, you know, that's kind of the calculus there. It also would look pretty bad for the team if they brought in Pau Gasol and just, like, cut him, like, 2-3 weeks later. I think that looks even worse than moving on from Christian Wood. But, you know, it's possible this could be the best thing for Christian. You know, he might be able to go get signed by another team, be able to play, you know, some meaningful minutes down the stretch, and maybe set himself up for, you know, a new contract next year.
You know, every time he would go to the Herd and he'd have a big game, he would go find on Twitter a tweet about it and then tweet, why am I not getting my opportunity in the NBA? Did any of that factor in at all? Was he disgruntled? Was there anything like that that the Bucks had to move on from him in that way, or was it simply a roster decision?
It was simply a roster decision. I think there were only one or two times that I remember that he, you know, kind of aired a little bit of frustration or whatever on social media. Maybe three at most, but at least that I'm aware of. You know, so I think that just in talking to people around the team, I think they didn't want to move on from him. They wanted to keep him. They wanted to. This wasn't the plan. The plan was to hold on to him because they saw his value. They thought he was, you know, a really good teammate and somebody who took that difficult lifestyle of up and down between the NBA and the G League. He took it well. You know, I think in the past he might have had issues with, you know, people, like, maybe attitude or whatever, and, like, they didn't see that, like, you know, just people talking to around the league, around the team, they didn't see, like, that he was an attitude problem or an issue. He came to work, he did what he was supposed to do, you know, and he put up huge numbers in the G League. And so I think that, you know, if it weren't for the injuries, Christian Wood would still be in the box.
How do you see Coach Bud managing the final couple of weeks of the season, managing load management, other guys getting rest, and, you know, I mean, that they pretty much got a one or a two seed at the very least sewed up. Well, how do you see that happening?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of preached consistency and wanting to, you know, go into the playoffs playing well. You know, they don't want to, you know, struggle their way through the last 11 games or have any issues in that regard. So I think that until they clinch that one seed, I don't think we'll see a ton of load management or just rest days that are gratuitous or overly cautious or anything like that. I think they want to make sure they are playing well, are integrating their new pieces, figuring out those rotations without Brogdon. And then once, you know, if they can get to a point where over the last few games they can rest some guys and cool it down before the playoffs, you know, I think they'll do that. But, you know, for now, I think it's still too early to start doing that.
Hey, you wrote a piece the other day about Giannis, and there was a lot of talk yesterday, and, you know, there should have been, about face of the league kind of stuff, where it's LeBron and then maybe Curry, but Giannis is definitely in that conversation. He goes on the road, and he is signing autographs, and there's people out to see him, and the international thing is huge. Does he have a hesitation to wanting to take over that mantle fully from LeBron? Because when we were reading some of the quotes yesterday from your article, it seems like if he's got to change who he is, that would be a stop for him.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for him, is that, you know, he's done the kind of soul searching and thinking about it, and he's decided, like, hey, I want to be who I am. I don't want to be who people want me to be or expect me to be or think I should, anything like that. He wants to be just who he is. And if that can be enough where people say, oh, wow, Giannis is the face of the league doing what he does, like, then he's cool with that. But if he has to change and do things differently, you know, then he's like, ah, forget it. Like, I don't care about that perception or that idea of being the face of the league if it's not actually me, like, being who I am. And so, you know, I think that's a pretty, you know, mature, you know, thought about it. Obviously, he's put time into considering, you know, his status and his stature in the league. And, you know, rightfully so, considering he's an all-star captain, he's going to be a perennial all-star, and, you know, he is already in that conversation among players. You know, depending on where you ask, I think if you ask people in Greece, he's definitely the face of the league. So, you know, if you ask people in Milwaukee, he's the face of the league to them. You know, he's definitely rising up in terms of notoriety, in terms of getting, you know, commercials and different endorsements and all that type of stuff. You know, it's not too long into the future where, you know, the top star of the league could be Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Hey, who are you taking in the tournament to go all the way?
I haven't given it a ton of thought yet. I usually try and wait till the play-in games are done, and that way I can
sell
the bracket.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. So I usually wait until, like, Thursday morning, but if I had to guess how my bracket's going to go, I'll probably end up with Duke just because,
yeah,
I think that would be the most fun thing to see Zion play all those games. And they're also really, really good. So I think that's probably a safe bet. But, you know, the best part of the tournament is things going awry.
You know, Velasquez, the former Marquette beat writer.
Yeah.
Do you keep an eye on them a little bit too, Matt?
Yeah, just a little bit. You know, I keep an eye on what they're doing and read my guy Ben Steele. And, you know, I'm a little jealous because, you know, I'm from Connecticut. So if I could have, you know, been covering Marquette now, I could have gone home and visited family and covered Marquette over there at the XL Center. But, you know, covering the Bucks is not a bad gig either.
Yeah, you got the Cavs tonight. That'll be fun.
Yeah, so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're home Friday night against Miami and the weekend. So,
all right. Yeah. Hey, appreciate the time. We will talk to you next week, Matt.
All right, can't wait.
Matt Velasquez joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935. One of the things in that Velasquez article was that Giannis doesn't have the, he calls it the American swag, and he doesn't, like, want to dress up in suits. He wasn't in a suit last night. He was, you know, it looked like he could have taken his warm up off and jumped in the game. He was wearing a headband, remember, which a lot of the ladies liked because of Tim Frazier wearing a headband. So
remember back in a couple of years
LeBron
ago,
LeBron didn't even show up.
The NBA was starting to make these guys wear suits, and they've gotten away from that a little bit.
Yeah.
But they were making these guys, I couldn't remember the reason why, but they were making these guys wear coat and ties.
Well, because they were wearing, like, they didn't like how they looked.
Yeah, blue jeans and all that.
Wasn't there a day where I remember Allen Iverson wore a Bucks jersey?
On the bench?
Yeah, like an old one. Like the green.
On the Philly bench?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
God.
It was right before they.
Yeah, but it was like he was a Bucks fan. He was wearing it for fashion.
Yeah, just for fashion.
Yeah.
Matt Velasquez joins us. He's got Duke. We'll tell you about our brackets and the problem that if you're going to take Duke, you might end up running into. We'll talk some brackets coming up with you guys momentarily. Do want to remind you guys about Harry's Razors and the great deals that you can get with them. Look, more than 10 million people have joined Harry's Razors. They are doing something right. The whole reason that Harry's was founded was because they run into the same problem that I ran into, that other people that I've talked to, like Sparky uses them, that use Harry's Razors. You run into a problem where you're just not finding a razor that consistently works for you, and you're paying way too much money for it. You shouldn't have to go out to the store and buy razors, and then when you scan the item, you're like, whoa, what am I paying for? A lot of times, you're just paying for how it looks. You're not even paying for the quality. These razor companies got into like an arms race with themselves to say, what degree of engineering can we do? Let's not worry about the razor. Let's just make the blade look cool, the razor, the handle look cool so that we can charge more money. Harry's just wants your razor to be smooth, close, comfortable, and for it to work. So that's why the guys that founded it hooked up with an engineering company in Germany that's been doing this for like 100 years, and they keep their prices low with that factory, and they keep their prices low by sending the razors to your house. So they're a better quality blade than the ones that you're used to buying, and it's going to cost you less money. That's a win-win situation. Harry's believes in their product so much, they'll give you your money back if you don't love your shave. That's their 100% quality guarantee. So get on board. New customers will get $5 off a trial set from Harry's when you use my code BART at harrys.com. Harrys.com, the code is BART. You'll get a razor, a weighted handle, the foaming shave gel, and a travel cover, and you'll get it all. It's their starter set for just $3, and the shipping on that is going to be free when you use the code BART at harrys.com. So I've been talking about it. You want to try it. It's only going to cost you $3. The shipping is taken care of because of that code BART. Go to harrys.com. Join the millions and millions who have tried Harry's. Use the code BART at checkout and claim your offer. Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Chuck Freeman. Hey, when Matt Velasquez says they cut Christian Wood over Paul Gasol because it wouldn't look good if you cut Gasol, would you have rather them cut Paul Gasol than Christian Wood?
No. I mean,
I get what he's saying. You almost can't.
You can't, because I think you need Gasol in case you need. I mean, you might need somebody to bang on a center in the postseason.
Can't that be Christian Wood?
Well, Wood's never been there before. Gasol is going to be all in the right spots. You know, obviously, he's at a different part of his game than he was a few years ago. But I would still rather have the veteran in there, Gasol, than Wood, who's never, I mean, God, he hasn't even seen major minutes in a regular season game, and you're expecting him to play in a postseason game? No, that's why they got Gasol as a safety valve. Otherwise, if they wouldn't have signed Gasol otherwise, they would have just promoted Wood to the roster.
No, that's a good point.
They wouldn't have signed him a long time ago, so there was no need.
We're going to talk some NCAA, so got to play this. You're getting pumped up over there. The juice is flowing.
Yeah, I can't wait, man.
I know. You know those producer Ryan Horvath's bopping his head.
These games, the last two nights. I mean, tonight and last night. I mean, that the first four never does anything for me. To me, it just always starts Thursday.
Well, there were some good games last night.
No, there was. There was. I've actually been to Fairleigh Dickinson.
You know, when the first four first got introduced, I was like, what a dumb concept. These teams are all so bad. But then you look at it, and tonight you got the Johnnies. St. John's is in action. Belmont is pretty damn good. I actually have Belmont going to the Sweet 16 on one bracket. So these games get a little bit better every year because these mid-major schools get a little bit better. And the difference is because they get four-year players, whereas the one-and-dones don't really learn the system. It's kind of just like show out, improve your draft stock, while these guys are actually trying to win conference championships.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why you're seeing so many mid-majors break through, because you're going with 22-year-old kids, these four-year kids.
Yeah.
You know, Butler did it a few years ago.
Yeah.
These four-year Loyola, four-year kids are going through, and, yeah, I mean, they've been together. They've played some solid basketball, fundamentals together. And, I mean, there's no replacement of all that experience they play together with.
Let me tell you the one thing everybody's doing wrong with their brackets. I mean, everybody does this wrong every year. You do it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get the perfect bracket, man. It's 1 in 9 quintillion odds. It ain't going to happen. You will not get the perfect bracket. So when you're filling out a bracket, why do you fill out a bracket? To win money. To put the money in the pool and win money. So don't fill out what you think is going to happen. You fill out counterintuitive to what you think other people are going to do. So don't take Duke to win it all. Everybody wants to take Duke to win it all.
Yep.
Take Gonzaga to the finals. Nobody wants to take them. Take Michigan State to beat Duke, because nobody wants to do that. Take Virginia, because nobody wants to take Virginia. do that. What, are you trying to win money or are you trying to be perfect?
Oh, yeah.
If you're trying to be perfect, it ain't going to work.
If you have like a mid-major going to this, the Elite Eight and nobody else, like if you had Loyola last year, man, you were gold. Like the year I had Butler again, I mean, nobody else had Butler, but I picked them and I won the pool because you got them and nobody else does. I think that's what you're talking about there.
Right. You got to go counterintuitive. If you're going to try to win money,
find somebody and go up ride them.
Yeah, don't just try to take Duke because if you think nobody's taking Duke, then go ahead or try the two bracket theory. If you can, I am still going to do one where I take Duke because they probably are going to win it.
But
then I want to take a different one where I take Michigan State over Duke and then Virginia and then Gonzaga.
Like, I'm taking Florida State. I mean, I'm sure there's some people, but I don't expect a lot of people to take Florida State to go to the Final Four. But if they do, I'm going to get a lot of points that other people aren't going to get.
So how likely, and I'll play the dumb guy because I am dumb when it comes to this. I don't. The really only Duke I've seen this year is because of Zion. So mm-hmm. The only time I've seen UNC is because of Zion when they played Duke. And then the one game I saw that they beat up on Florida State, where I had money on Florida State and they shot terribly. So I don't want to take them anymore. And that's why I'm going to take them to lose to Vermont. And I also like Vermont because I thought they were going to play Wisconsin. And I think Wisconsin's bad. So now I like Vermont, even though I've never seen them. And so it's just a weird reasoning to why I like anything. But when I look at this and I start to fill these out, when I filled out my bracket, you know, you just go boom, 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 and see what happens. I go Duke and then Virginia and then North Carolina and then Gonzaga. And then I've got the four ones. And then I think, well, what am I doing? And then I go backwards and switch. Is this year a year where you could see the four ones, or are one of these two seeds or three seeds
better? You know, people always say it's the tournament's wide open. I think this year, I don't see it at all. I don't see as many upsets this year as in years past. I really don't. And I don't see Duke getting picked off. I mean, I mean, we talk about picking upsets. I don't see Duke getting beat. I don't see Virginia getting beat in their regional. And Carolina, their toughest test is, I think, is Kentucky if they meet in the regional final. Gonzaga is the only, the West field, the West region, that's the only one I'm a little suspect about. I think Michigan as a two seed, that's a weak two seed. Wisconsin has beaten Michigan. And Michigan's a two seed. I don't see it.
The reason I like Gonzaga so much this year, and you could look at that conference championship game where they scored only like 45 points, but I mean, they're a top offensive team in the country, but they're also top 15 in defense. That's why I like them. The thing that scares me is their toughest matchup is going to be Duke. And I feel like we're getting that matchup because I could see Gonzaga getting picked off. I just can't see Duke getting picked off even with terrible three-point shooting just because I feel like, who's stopping Zion? Like, when you look at those matchups in the first two, three rounds, like, there's no pros on the floor until you see Gonzaga. And then they have a lottery pick, possibly, and they got guys that could score. But the thing is like I said yesterday, man, Gonzaga's already beat Duke. I don't see him doing it twice.
Yeah.
What about Sparty? Can Sparty take down Duke?
Just too beat up. I mean, I like the way that they play. They're physical. They defend. But they have days, too, like every other team in the Big Ten, like the Badgers do, where you'll turn on the game and there'll be 8 minutes to go in the first half and they have 9 points. That's the problem with them.
There's nobody in that region, really, who can beat Duke. I don't see really anybody. I mean, even LSU at 3 seed, LSU's got all sorts of issues. Virginia Tech, they're not beating Duke. You know, they did it earlier this year in a regular season game without Zion.
No, yeah.
But, and that was at Virginia Tech, but they're not beating Duke with Zion in there. And you're saying about Gonzaga? See, I think a couple teams I think can give them a test. I think Buffalo can. I think if they got to meet up with Florida State, certainly. I was telling you how much. And I think Texas Tech. I've seen the Red Raiders play a couple of times. I like the way they play. Shoot the ball real well. I think Texas Tech. So I think where the West region is pretty open. I'm not so sure Gonzaga is going to make it to the Final Four.
When we did a Final Four, we had a guy, Brian, call in and wanted us to pick his Final Four because we did it last year for him. And I guess we sucked, but he wanted us to do it again. Mm-hmm. The Final Four, I kind of bowed out for you to do that. You had Florida State, Duke, North Carolina, and Virginia. I was surprised you took Virginia to the Final Four. It seems the book on them always is that they always get in their own way.
Yeah.
And Tony Bennett can't coach in the tournament.
I mean, that's in the back of my mind. I think anybody who has Virginia every year thinks that. And then, you know, they got beat by the 16 seed, as we all know, last year. But I think this, I mean, the times I've seen Virginia play, And I saw him a couple weeks ago against Syracuse at the Carrier Dome, and they looked amazing, man, the way they were shooting the basketball. And I know they got beat in their conference tournament, but I see them. I got them beating Tennessee, who I think very highly of Tennessee, too, another team that got beat in their conference tournament. But I think Virginia is finally going to break through and get to the Final Four.
How similar do they play to Wisconsin? Because I hear that a lot.
Defense, their offensive efficiency.
That if you hate the way Wisconsin plays,
yes,
you'll hate Virginia.
Slow down, get good three-point shots, and obviously all of Tony Bennett's teams are going to be good on defense. I mean, Wisconsin's good on defense, too. I mean, Wisconsin's the best defensive efficiency in the Big Ten. I don't know where Virginia ranks, but I know Virginia plays D, too.
I always look every single year, especially when I fill out the brackets, for, okay, so now the knock on Virginia is they kind of choke in the tournament every single year, and last year they got beat at the 16 seed.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the reason I took Gonzaga to go so far last year was because that's kind of been the narrative on them since Mark Few took over, like, great in the regular season. They started off kind of as the underdog, like, nobody knew who they were unless you go back to John Stockton's days there. We're sneaking up on teams, making it to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight. But then when they became the favorite and started getting, you know, top recruits, these blue chip recruits, then they started getting knocked out in the tournament, and then they were like the choke artist. So I always like look at things like that. Like, now teams are kind of down, or people are down on Virginia, but I think this is their best shot to win a national title. Difference between them this year and last year, as good as they were defensively, now they got some guys that could get them buckets. And then I look at like the teams, like the underdog teams that everybody's on, like Buffalo. Everybody loves Buffalo. So that scares me a little bit. And you start, you know, especially the last like 5-6 years, because we see these mid-major schools, ever since like the VCUs of the world kind of came about, everybody wants to pick the upsets. And so then you get down to the Sweet 16, to the Elite Eight, and you got all these fives and fours and everybody upsetting the one seeds. And this year, like you guys said, I look for the top teams to be around in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four. Like, it's going to be Carolina, it's going to be Duke, because there's just so many superstars on the floor for these teams. Like, Carolina plays like an NBA team. I think they're my favorite team in the tournament as far as style.
They might be the fastest team in the country.
Because they could defend, and they could score 90 points on you, 95 points. So they could keep up with Duke. Because that's the problem when you're playing Duke is, I mean, some of these schools that are scoring 65, 70 points per game can't match up with 3-4 NBA pros on the floor. And,
yeah,
you know, Gonzaga can, Kentucky can, North Carolina can. The thing about Kentucky, it's just like the same story every year is, in the beginning of the year, everybody worries about them a little bit as they take a loss like they did to Duke when they got hammered. But then towards the end of the year, all these guys step up and kind of find their role. They're interviewing Calipari, actually. I thought it was a really good interview, besides the fact that he had every player that he's ever coached's jersey like in the back of him. But he was talking about why they struggle in the beginning of the year. And he said it's because they don't put in their team defense until after the first month of the season. And he said that the reason that the guys play better on the offensive end is because you don't have confidence on the offensive side of the ball until you have the confidence defensively. When you're getting stops, he said that then his guys...
Wilson model, yeah, right there.
Well, I mean, Cal, he gets so much praise for the recruiting.
Yeah.
I don't think he gets enough praise for how good he coaches these guys.
Right, so when you're like, well, oh man, I don't know if Kentucky can knock off a Carolina or a Duke, because you go back and you look at that matchup, mm-hmm, when he got smashed by 40. The reason they gave up 100-plus to Duke was because they didn't even have their team defense in. Mm-hmm. And so they were able to score with Duke. They just, you know, not at the pace that they needed to.
Tyler Hero has come in Kentucky. I think there were some people who doubted that.
I love that kid.
Boy, he's come into Kentucky, and he has fit right in. He is. I have a feeling, though, he's going to come back for another year. He obviously wants to go to the NBA, and that's the reason why he went to Kentucky. But with his size at 6'6", man, I could see if he's not coming out this year, definitely for next year, for sure.
I want to bring up this mock draft that they did at The Athletic, where Tyler Hero right now is slated to go 21 to the Celtics. So in this article, it says, we think he'd be a first-round pick if he entered the NBA draft. He'd also be an All-American if he chooses to stay in school. Regardless, Hero doesn't have a bad choice to make. If you're giving advice to Tyler Hero, do you tell him to stay? Do you tell him to go? I mean,
if he went, he'd be a lottery. I mean, he'd not lottery, but he'd be a first round pick. Yeah, I think you have to go.
Disagree.
I think you do.
I disagree with that.
Why? How much better can he get?
Well, I don't think he could get.
When I say how much better can he get, in the NBA, he's going to take 500 shots a day.
Right.
And, you know, they're going to give him the strength training he needs, and he doesn't have to go to class at all.
Right.
Well, I don't know what the purpose for him staying another year is.
I mean, I guess that's a good point. I was going to say to work on his body and work on his game a little bit, get a little bit stronger. Mm-hmm. But the reason I would maybe hold out is just because you look at the draft this year, and I think you could improve your stock just by the fact that there's going to be no R.J. Barrett. I mean, there's going to be top recruits, but there's going to be no Zion Williamson. So I feel like you could improve your stock a little bit, and that means more money. I mean, if you're looking at I just see this every year, and especially with Kentucky, is we see these one and dones, but I feel like so many guys should stay. Like, I go back to Marcus Teague the year that Kentucky, they either won the national championship or they went to the Final Four that year, and he was a freshman, and he got drafted by the Bulls and spent his whole career in the D League and never even played at, you know, at an NBA level, really. So a lot of these guys come out, and they have no shot at making the roster, and then they bounce around to the G League and back then the D League. So I just feel like if I'm Hero, I go back for one more year to try to improve if I see myself at 2021. I mean, unless you want to get in a good fit in Boston. Good thing about that is then you're playing on a winning team.
But I mean,
but how much are you playing?
He's got two things. He can shoot well, and he's 6'6". Unlike Marcus Howard, who's 5'8", 5'9", 5'10". Does that mock draft have Marcus Howard at all?
It does, number 43 to the Hawks, and it says Howard is one of the most interesting prospects in this draft, if only because he's an absolutely elite pull-up shooter in an era where that skill is valued more than just about any other. But he struggles to get separation, and at 5'11", he's going to be a poor defender in the NBA. Now, he takes him to the Hawks here because they value shooting as much as anybody else. They've got a lot of picks, so it wouldn't be a surprise. But if you're Marcus Howard and you can go out and fall in the mid-second round, do you tell him to stay or do you tell him to do it? Do you tell him to go out?
He's got to get a better handle, too. I mean, he turns the ball over too much for the NBA. Probably could use playing some more point guard. And obviously, defensively, it's tough for him a little bit. He's not going to be on Morant this tomorrow when he plays. He can't guard him. Boy, I mean, I just think you give that guy a little separation on the court, as long as he's not your focal scorer in the NBA, which he won't be, I think he can come out right now and play. He's not getting any taller. He's a smart ball player, good kid. If the Bucks had a second-round pick for him, I would take him in a second.
Would you advise Howard to go out?
Yeah, I would.
If I'm Atlanta, I'm not selecting him because then I have the smallest backcourt in NBA history with him and Trae Young. You're like a combined like 7 foot.
Yeah. No, I mean, but again, he's not going
to
be
They'll have to like step on each other's shoulders.
Howard's not going
to trench coat.
You know, you're just asking
to
come in,
movies,
get a little separation if he can, and hit a couple of threes for you.
That's actually a great question because I always have this argument with people. Like, okay, so if you're Marcus Howard and you know you could come back and average 30 a game and be one of the best, maybe Big East players, best players in Marquette history, which maybe you already
is. Well, this is the Henry Ellenson situation.
So do you do that and continue to be big man on campus? I mean, you get all the chicks you want, you're getting your education for free, and you're like the man, and you have a shot at winning an NCAA tournament. Or do you go to the pros and you really don't know your future? Like, you could bounce around, you could be in the G League, you could
be
playing
for
the
Herd. I might chase the money, to be honest.
These guys want the money. I mean, like Frank Kaminsky. I don't think it mattered really, but he wanted to stay around. He liked the game. He knew he had a chance to go to the Final Four again. He liked being a college kid. And he stuck around for one more year, and he was a lottery pick. But I don't know how much more Howard can improve his stock. I mean, if he goes out and puts up 28 points a game next year, you know, I think the size is the thing that will always draw him away from being a first-rounder.
It's Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins. Ryan Horvath with us. We'll talk more on this coming up at 9 o'clock. Do you want to talk on the two former, now we can officially say, former Green Bay Packers as Clay Matthews goes on to the Rams? Randall Cobb to the Cowboys. Did the Packers let one or both get away? It's Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins, 105.7 FM, The Fan. That is what the future holds for Clay Matthews. The Los Angeles Ram tweeted out a picture last night, mocked up in a Rams jersey. It'll be a two-year deal. He can make up to $16.75 million. Reports were he could have made more elsewhere, which I'm kind of stunned at. I'd love to know what other teams were offering him. Not that a team wouldn't find a way to use him. I just hope they don't, like, use him inside and he's awesome. I mean, that would kind of bother me.
Yeah, how about that? I mean, if he went to L.A. and he prospered and he stayed healthy. And, you know, I mean, that would be like, man, they could have used him here to do the same kind of role. But we'll see what how they use him. But, you know, Clay and Randall Cobb, they had good careers here. I know people are down at Clay.
They're surefire Packer Hall of Famers.
Yes, without a doubt. You know,
and which I don't know if anyone.
They are. They are Packer Hall of Famers.
You know what? I'm going to put up a poll real quick. Does anyone care about the Packer Hall of Fame?
Probably not.
No, I think a lot. I think we're in the minority if we don't. I mean, you're going to be talking to people. Future Packer Hall of Famer. You're going to hear that about these guys a million times today. And who cares?
Who on the 2010 Packer team won't be a future Hall of Famer? I mean, you almost feel like the odd man out then, right? I mean, shouldn't they all? Who? Pally, okay. But the point is, like, the starters, I mean, everybody, the guy who's most of the starters there, they should be Packer Hall of Famers.
Do you care about the Packers Hall of Fame? Yes or no?
What kind of question is this?
Yeah, well.
All right, at 105.7 FM, the fan.
Both of these guys are good guys over the years. They were. All right. And, you know, came in, and they were productive. They earned their money from the Packers, too. You know, they both battled injuries. But I don't know if you have anything bad to say. I mean, a bad thing to say about either one of those guys.
No, I was always a big Randy Cobb fan ever since I first laid my eyes on his beautiful blue eyes.
Yeah, how about the return to kickback at opening night against New Orleans in 2011, his first game. And you know, Matthews didn't live up to the Hall of Fame career we thought he was going to have. I thought first couple of years he was on his way, and it just never matched it.
Yeah, you know, 5 years ago we talk about it, we can say not only will he be a Packer Hall of Famer, I mean, he'll have his number 52 up there.
No,
yeah. Nobody will ever wear that again.
Yeah.
And Randall Cobb was a huge impact on this team. I mean, he had a very close relationship with Aaron Rodgers. Instagramming about it last night.
Cobby, did you call him?
I will look it up for you to say exactly what he said. I do not believe he referred to him as Cobby in this particular instance. But those two were very close, both on and off the field. Aaron Rodgers saying, this is a quote, "I have to remind myself that some birds aren't meant to be caged. And when they fly away, the part of you that knows it was a sin to lock them up does rejoice. Still, the place you live in is that much more drab and empty now that they're gone. I guess I just miss my friend. Hashtag friendship. Hashtag teammates. Hashtag brothers. Hashtag Packers," and it's the picture of them in their last game when they both kind of knew that the end was coming, and they're both crying a little bit.
So, will he do the Aaron? Will he do the same kind of act he did when Jordy left, and do the passive aggressive stuff at training camp again with Randall? Well, he took away. You know, why bring somebody else in? We just got rid of Randall. We couldn't sign him for 1 year, $5 million. Would he do the same thing, you think?
That's a quote from Shawshank Redemption, by the way.
Oh, for Aaron?
The Rodgers quote.
Okay.
Put up there. Hashtag friendship, teammates, brothers, Packers. So far in our poll, do you care about the Packers Hall of Fame? 75% say no.
Yeah. I mean, if we went right down that Packer Hall of Fame list, you'd find guys in there and you'd say, man, how's that guy in? But that's just, I mean, you don't have to be a pro football Hall of Famer to get in that Hall of Fame.
So Cobb and Clay, they both move on again. Clay Matthews goes to the Rams, 2 years, up to $16 million. Randall Cobb's going to sign a one-year, $5 million deal with the Dallas Cowboys, who immediately in your brain you think, well, they'll use him like they use Cole Beasley. And just like when Jordy went on to Oakland, there's a part of me that roots – I mean, I like these guys. They would seem like great guys, especially Jordy, Clay, and Cobb. I mean, you can't get more Packer than that. And this whole decade, those three guys were a big part of it almost as much as Aaron Rodgers. So you think, I want them as people to have a good season. But then when they do succeed, then you think, well, then why did we get rid of them? Like when Jordy had a game where he was like 9 for 180 and 2 scores. And you're like, oh, boy, did we make a mistake? Randall Cobb, do you want him to succeed in Dallas? Which I think he probably will. Clay Matthews, if he plays inside linebacker and has, you know, 6-7 sacks, I'm going to be like, well, I mean, we could have used him too. So I root for these guys, but also I don't want the Packers to be wrong.
Well, these are two conference rivals too. I mean, two teams are battling for to get in the playoffs, right? The Cowboys. Of course, the LA Rams went to the Super Bowl last year. So, I mean, you want them to succeed, but you don't want to have too much of an impact that he makes those teams that much better.
Do they play either of those teams this year? They do play the Cowboys on the road. So the Packers don't play the Rams, but they do play the Cowboys.
Of course. They're always on the road against the Cowboys.
They play the Cowboys and Niners and Chiefs on the road. It's like 1996 all over again is what it's going to feel like. But the Packers do play the Cowboys
on the road. I feel like they play the Cowboys on the road at least every other year. It's always down there.
Chuck, what's your favorite Randall Cobb memory?
My favorite one? I thought the kick return on opening night where he caught it deep in the end zone. Right at the back of the end zone, it was like, they were like, oh, down it. And he took it right out and took it right to the house, like 106 yards, that Thursday night game against the Saints.
You know, Ty Montgomery tried to do that this season.
Yeah, and he ended up at the 10-yard line. Fumbled and ended up on a different team the next week.
Mine would be, if we're going to do this, which is fine. Mine would be when they won the NFC North against the Bears.
Yeah, I was going to say that too.
2 days prior to my wedding.
Yeah, 2013.
Yeah, we watched that game at the distillery? Is that the place right next to Lambeau? Is that the place right next to Lambeau, the distillery?
Down the road a little bit. That's away a little bit.
You can see Lambeau from the parking lot?
I think you can see Lambeau from everywhere in Green Bay. The distillery's down a couple of streets. Are you thinking about Stadium View?
No. No.
And Doozy's?
No.
Okay.
Pretty sure it was the distillery.
All right, yeah, that's down a couple of streets. I was at the game. I was next to Bill Michaels. Bill and I were sitting next to each other in the press box when right in front of us, Cobb made the catch.
Clay Matthews' memory would be when he took himself out of the Seattle game.
Yeah, but that's a disappointing way to remember him. How about the fumble he caused in the Super Bowl? That's what
be. Yeah, okay.
The fumble that he caused in the Super Bowl.
It is time.
He caused the yes.
All right,
yes.
I'll go with that one.
Yeah, I gotta have a good memory for Matthews.
Like when Peppers retired, I don't remember him fondly. I remember him for telling Morgan Burnett to go down. So I can remember Clay Super Bowl, and I'll remember Cobb. I remember good things about Cobb.
Yeah, you know Peppers, but I mean Matthews was here a long time. You know Peppers, and I remember Peppers dropping that. Remember they had him run tight end one time, and he dropped the pass in the end zone, and that was that. They weren't going to run him on offense anymore. But, Matthews had a real good career. I think of him on the sidelines flipping that hair back to put the helmet on. And every time he did it, I was like, man, get a haircut.
Christian says, guys, Clay is only about 10, 15 sacks away from the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, I don't know about that. I'd be surprised if he got in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Mark says, in all caps, yes, I love the Packer Hall of Fame. Okay, all right.
I've never been in the Packer Hall of Fame.
I guess I should have phrased that question differently. Do you care about the Packers Hall of Fame? 56 said no. I care that it's there. I care that you can go look at stuff. I don't care when guys become Packer Hall of Famers. That's what I should have
said. You know, I like to look at, I can't believe I've never been in that place, and they've redone it and moved it, but I've never been in it. But I'd like to go down there and see all the... I would assume they have memorabilia from all the games gone by. I would think. You know, Eddie Doucette wanted to do that for the Milwaukee Bucks under the old regime. Eddie Doucette said, hey, we should have a Bucks Hall of Fame like they have a Packer Hall of Fame. And the Bucks management at the time did not want to do it.
You know, when I toured the arena before it was completed, there was a room that said trophy room. And I made a joke on a video I did that, why is this room so big? The Bucks have very little trophies.
Mm-hmm.
Does that room exist? I haven't seen that.
I never heard of it.
It said trophy room on the thing. And every time I'm in Fiserv, I never see them.
In a quarter? Or is it a separate room? Or
it was like you have to get access to go back there.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
It wasn't for the public.
No.
I don't think.
No, I have not still seen every part of Fiserv Forum.
Okay.
But, I don't know. That. Never heard of it. It's called a trophy room.
It said trophy room on the thing, and made a joke.
Did they have the 71 trophy in there?
Well, it wasn't complete at
the
time.
Oh, it wasn't complete, okay.
It just said trophy room, and it was a huge room, and I thought, what?
Yeah, no, I don't know anything about it.
It's Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. We'll talk some more NCAA tournament. Do want to talk about Craig Kimbrell. The discussion and rumors that he could be in talks with the Brewers. And what that would mean for Jeremy Jeffress. Also, Christian Yelich. We talked about this yesterday. He did speak about, he was asked, do you feel like you're underpaid? He gave an answer to that. We'll have that coming up for you next hour as well. But we'll talk some NCAA with Eli Hershkovich coming up next, Action Network, and down in Chicago with our friends at The Score. He joins us next. Chuck and Winkler on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.